Alrighty, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam.
Welcome back.
2 days later.
2 days later, because we filmed an episode ebla mbarah. And okay, guys, you're going to have to bear with us because we're a little hungry. And also we just filmed the day before yesterday, even though this session was booked before that. But then we had time to film. So today we're kind of like, what do we do? I still have some of the questions from before, I think. Do they save?
No, as long as you screenshot them. That's the only way.
They didn't screenshot.
Oh, there you go.
Well, I can't help you anymore.
No, that's fine.
That's fine. But okay, one of the questions that I had that came up was, how do you handle... I had a girl who sent in a question. It was something along the lines of, I have a really unforgiving relationship with my father in the sense that they don't get along. He has his own ideology of the way things need to happen, and especially that she's a girl and all of that. And she's like, I want to love him and forgive him and not carry that hatred in my heart. How do I go about that? And keep in mind that sometimes it's harder when people have to stay in the same house with said father.
Oh, this is such a difficult conversation, because anytime I've spoken about this on social media, I'm always like, you have to contextualize it. What type of region is this person coming from? What is the social, ethnic, socioeconomic background, religious?
I'm going to assume, with the way this question was, it was that she doesn't have the means to leave the house. And it's. I think it's one of those cultural places where it's like, no, a girl can't go live elsewhere unless she's married. Mm. So she's in a situation where she's forced to face this reality of hers every day. But I really respect the question, because she's saying, how can I... She wants to change her perception of him, despite the fact... Because she didn't ask, like, how do I get away from him, or how do I leave this house? She was like, how can I just view him differently? How can I, bini wa bin hali, in my heart and soul, forgive him?
It reminds me of a comment that someone made online where they said, how do I break the chain of ancestral trauma? And then the response was, the second that you stop trying to seek validation from the very ancestral lineage that you're trying to break away from,
yeah,
or trying to break free from. So that would be my answer to her in a more kind of convoluted way, which is that I always say this, when it comes to parents, when it comes to people who we have to respect, who are of an older generation, they don't know any better, they're thinking in a completely different way to the way, yeah, that we think, and we have the luxury and the privilege to be more self-aware, you have to accept them for their limitations. And their limitations might be their lack of self-awareness. It might be the fact that they're not emotionally astute. It might be the fact that they have abandoned their feelings so much growing up, and they've taught to think and function in a certain way, that they don't have time or room or space to cushion and protect your feelings. So the only thing that you can do is use that modicum of self-awareness and the privileges that you've gained of becoming that emotionally astute person to your advantage, and say, you know what? I will do the emotional labor and the heavy lifting in this relationship, and I will love you from afar, in the sense that I will create distance, but not too much distance, because I know I have to tolerate you because we live in the same household and because of cultural reasons, et cetera, et cetera. And I have to respect you dinian, religiously, and do what is my wajib.
Yeah.
And that's as far as it goes, because a lot of the times when people have issues with their fathers, when especially girls who have issues with their fathers, they're like, I wish he was the person that I projected onto him. And I wish he was the person that I always thought he could be. I've always seen this potential, which is why they end up seeking these types of partners in relationships. Like, they fall in love with the potential of a person, not the actual person. Mm. And so when it comes to women or girls in relationship to their fathers, he will never be the person that you've envisioned in your mind. That doesn't exist. You have curated this vision. You've done so you can soothe the pain and the hurt that you haven't been able to resolve within yourself. Like, it just kind of boils down to that. So you have to forgive. You have to not necessarily forget, but you have to create that distance. And the only way that you can move forward is to let that emotion go. And the only way you can do that is through forgiveness. Otherwise, it sits buried inside of you and you are always stressing out about it, always complaining about where that goes. And I just, it's a difficult one. Because parents, I think one of the most difficult things for women dealing with going through relationships with people in the world and going through romantic partnerships with men is their relationships that they have with their father. It is so damaging if they do not have a close relationship with their father. Their father can, you know, mess you up so much in the way that you view men and the way that you view power and structure and authority and submission that we had spoken about before, and safety, above everything, safety. If somebody is not safe with you emotionally, physically, mentally, psychologically, how are you going to seek that? How are you going to seek that? You're going to look in all the wrong places when it comes to relationship.
Absolutely.
And in the end, you will just keep going down this vicious cycle of attracting the wrong people in your life. And then you wake up one morning and go, where did this all come from? And it's like, it stemmed from Father Dearest.
Yeah, I agree. But also, I think it's a tough one because this is one of those situations, like we said, where I agree with what you said about a woman's relationship or a girl's relationship, rather, at first to her father is a huge metric of how her life's going to pan out, especially in when it comes to relationships with men. But they, unfortunately, and this is something that blows my mind, that we live in a time and age that fathers are not fathers. Mm-hmm. They're not around. And unfortunately, sometimes them being around is worse than them not being around.
Mm-hmm.
Because the poison and the toxicity and the destructive behavior patterns that they bring with them being around causes damage beyond repair in some cases, you know?
Absolutely.
And it was never like this before, and it should never be like this. But especially now, we live in a day and age where men are just, especially when it comes to being dads, it's rare that you find a dad who's present in the right way, you know? Because I'm not saying be present in an overbearing sense, but just the correct amount of presence, you know? But unfortunately, with these girls, there's a lot of times where, khalas, this is the hand you were dealt. Like, there is nothing you can do about changing your parents. This is your mom and this is your dad, and you will live and die with this having been your mother and this having been your father, with whatever trauma they brought along. And if you are in a position where you are forced to live in the same house with them for religious or cultural reasons, I do agree with you. If you want to break that generational trauma, is you have to stop requiring validation and confirmation from that generational line. So in this case, it would be the father, right? And not seeking validation is, if he doesn't approve of certain things that you're doing, as long as you're not doing anything detrimental to your safety and your honor and your dignity, it's okay. It is okay that he doesn't approve. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? If he's not patting you on the back every day saying, oh, that's my girl, or even anything, no form of positivity or acknowledgement in any way, sense, or form, you need to go find it for yourself. That could be, for example, through religion. When you go and read, for example, the Quran, and you start doing things that God has asked us to do, you know that God's happy with you. So you can replace that validation with a spiritual cup, you know, just keep filling that cup. You can go online, and this is where I've said before, for example, go watch, in your case, you love Sheikh Imam Omar Sulaiman, sorry, I adore Sheikh Hamza Yusuf, and I'll go watch certain teachings or lessons that they're trying to pass down to people through, you know, social media and online now, and I'll go try to apply that into my life. And it's a self-fulfillment kind of thing. So while you're living in that same house and you can't get what you, it's because it's going to take time to break that line and to not need that validation anymore and not be triggered when they don't validate you. It's going to take a lot of time, but fill up that time with other things.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I'm not even joking when I say paint, draw, sing in the mirror, read a book, watch those people that really are gonna, you know, feed your soul, and replace that emptiness with other things that are really self-fulfilling.
I agree. And I also think that we have to be considerate of the fact that it might never change. You might live your entire life where there is no resolution to this question that you've asked. And that one of the major tests in your life is to deal with this relationship.
Yes.
Because at the end of the day, God put that person, whether it's a father or a mother, in your life to be that father or mother for a reason.
Mm.
And they are supposed to teach you something that you are either struggling with or going through in your life that can be to the betterment of yourself, not to the detriment of yourself.
Yeah.
And I think that's where you can draw a line and decide who you're going to be. Are you going to be the victim of these circumstances, or are you going to be somebody who is going to overpower and trump that victim mentality? And I think that you decide, you know, which side of the coin that you're going to be on. And I think, you know, it goes back to what I was saying when you and I speak about this kind of privately, there are just men in this world that shouldn't have been fathers.
Facts.
There are people that are amazing human beings, great men, great business savvy minded individuals, intellectually stimulating, worldly, all of that jazz. They should have never been fathers.
Agreed.
And I think that to recognize that that is maybe their burden that they have to go through in their lifetime, and their mission that they should hopefully solve before they have to meet God on the day of judgment, and then they get judged for it, that's on them. And some of them don't succeed, and that's also on them. And I think that, you know, girls who are born to fathers, those girls are attached to their necks on the day of judgment.
Oh, for sure.
And so if you're a father and you don't know how to raise a woman, or you don't know how to raise a girl, and you don't treat a woman the way that she should be treated, so that if she decides to move on to another, you know, to her husband's house or to another family's house, because, you know, by way of marriage and whatnot, that she's not getting the best treatment she got from you, that she can recognize those patterns in the next house over, that's on you. That's on your neck.
Absolutely.
And I think that that is the biggest issue that I have with these men that shouldn't have been fathers. And yes, you know, granted, that was the cause that were dealt with them. That is what God chose for them. But they have the opportunity to course correct. They can change it. Whether they choose to, that's a different story.
I agree. I'll also add to that, because like you said, that it may very well never change. I think every woman who's ever had an absentee father or a destructive father in the household, and grew up with said father, owes it to herself to break that generational trauma, because it is a choice at the end of the day. It's the hand that you've been dealt. There's nothing you can do about it. This is the father that has been bestowed upon you. And you can either lament in it and scream and kick and cry of what life isn't fair and it's not fair and it's not fair. Or you can use that to better yourself, to gain awareness, to gain knowledge, to understand that life isn't always fair. Do better for yourself in order to attract a better partner and a better father for your children. Mm-hmm. So the thing is, you can take that into your next relationships and into your kids, and have your kids go through exactly what you went through, because more often than not, that's exactly what women do. Mm-hmm. Or you have a choice in that moment and decision to be like, you know what? I'm grateful. This is the hand that I've been dealt. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to take this soil and I'm going to plant something amazing with it. And the days that are to come in my life, I will be better and stronger for it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But that's a choice. And it's a really hard pill for a lot of people to swallow, but it is a choice that you have to make in that time. And it has nothing to do with your dad, and it has everything to do with you.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
And you always have a choice.
Always.
I feel like this idea of like, I don't have a choice. There was something, you know, I couldn't do it. I can't. Like all of this kind of negative, overarching negative language that people use. It's like, there is always a choice. Mm. There is always a way. You always have this fork in the road. You either go this way or that way. You either choose victory or you choose peace. It's whatever the case may be. So this person who had asked that question, you know, like your father is not going to change. Your father's going to stay exactly the same. He is the constant. You are the variable.
Yes.
You have to be the one to change.
Sometimes, so some people, she might tell you, this girl, for example, who sent in the question, I really don't have a choice. I don't have the financial means, or I'm 17. I actually can't leave my house. Sometimes in this case, the choice is to be patient and grateful and find a mental way out before a physical way out, or to lament in the misery and play victim and have an extremely negative mentality that will make your days even worse, because you know, you attract what you are and all of that. So sometimes the choice is to be patient, and how you're being patient. Are you being patient with gratitude, or are you being patient with complaint? You know what I mean? So that in itself is also a choice, because some people might tell you, I literally physically don't have a choice, but there is always a mental or emotional choice, because this falls for people who, for example, have been wrongly convicted and they stay in jail and the positivity never leaves them. Like these stories that you hear, do you know what I mean? It's almost miraculous. And you would think, I don't even know if I'd have that kind of faith, if I'd have that kind of determination. So if someone who's been wrongfully convicted can have that kind of determination, you as a young girl still living in your house, you can have that kind of determination because you have your whole life ahead of you. You know, and also the kicking and screaming parts about life's not fair, life's not fair. I'm just adding that because I know sometimes people in the comment will be like, yeah, but it's not fair. Or I get it. But who on earth told you that life was meant to be fair? And especially if you're coming at it from a spiritual point of view, the prophets, alayhum salam, had some of the toughest lives. The one whose brothers and family betrayed them, the one whose city kicked them out, the one who had to go into hiding, the ones who lost all their money and what, like all of that. Do you know what I mean? If life wasn't fair to them, who are the best of men, who are you? In retrospect, do you know what I mean? And also, you know, that the strong are forged in hell. I really believe it. I really do. So think about that next time you scream to yourself, life isn't fair, you know?
Well, I think also when people say life isn't fair or things aren't going their way, they refuse to turn back to the creator that has decided that type of dynamic that you're living in. And an example of that is somebody who's financially successful, who has everything going for them, who's got friends, who's got family, all of that jazz, but they're not in a relationship or romantic relationship and they feel so lonely. Their first kind of, like, call to action is to wallow in their misery. Oh, why am I lonely? Why did I not find someone? What is wrong with me? Am I going to die alone? Am I never going to find someone? It's never to realize that the true loneliness of being completely ostracized from any worldly thing or anything that is known as a distraction is one of the greatest gifts God can give you. Mm. That God loves you so much, he made you lonely. Mm. He made you so that you are without anything that would cause an effect or change or alter this trajectory that you're going on. So the only thing that you have to deal with as this constant variable that is in this trajectory, in this trajectory, is you. That's it. There's nobody else involved. Yeah. And so I used to always think like loneliness was something so hard to bear and so sad, and it would really make me sad about it. But now I'm just like, that is the biggest blessing that God can send your way. To be lonely is the biggest blessing.
I fully agree. I think my mother called me a few days ago and she was talking to my brother. And my brother was just having one of those moments where he was saying, I know I'm going to be rich and I know I'm going to be successful, you know? And God bless his soul. He's like, you know, Layla did it. Khalas, we're like breaking generational curses. Like, well, I got this. And I really believe it. I really believe it's in his bones. It's in this man's soul to be successful. My brother, for sure. But he was like, I'm so scared I'm going to be so lonely. And I was about to send him a message, but I didn't. I called him a few days later. I was like, let him sit with it a little bit. But the gist of what I wanted to tell him was like, it will absolutely be lonely. It'll be so lonely that almost no one can relate to you, that almost no one will understand you. People might resent you, hate you, make you feel smaller than you are because you are bigger than they are, you know? And that's the journey, especially towards spiritual ascension, towards financial success, especially in today's world where trust, especially what Islam was founded on, does not exist, you know? And I was like, you will be very alone, but do you know who will be right there with you? God. And he wants you that way. He wants you alone because it's not made for everyone and not everyone is made for it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I told him it'll be the best thing that's ever happened to you and you will thank him every day for doing that. And you know, it's, I personally think it's the best thing that happened to me. I love that my friends are few and far in between. You and I are like this. Very, very small. It's petite.
Population one.
Population one. Uno. And I love it. Mm-hmm. You know? I do, because we live in a day and age, Kaman, where sometimes it's better to be alone than to be surrounded by horrible company. Mm-hmm. It's better to eat alone than to be surrounded by someone who's eyeing your food, perhaps trying to poison you, perhaps stabbing you from under the table and you don't even recognize it, mm-hmm. you know? It's better to be alone than to force yourself to go just be around whomever out of the fear of being lonely. In that wild, magical things happen in that silence and in that stillness. Mm-hmm. Hence, for example, in Islam, the Fajr and Qiyam al-Layl, it's in the night where you cannot hear anything, not even your own thoughts, you know? It's because that is where the connection and the tethering happens. It's in those moments where you're not distracted. So if God removes these distractions from your life, do not complain. Thank him for it. Use it to your advantage. Hone in on it. Understand the gift that you've been given, because not everyone is given this gift. Mm-hmm. And I will add one more thing that I wanted to talk about last time, but I completely forgot about it. I told you about someone who was asking me about, oh, I left this job and I left these people and I left whatever, and then they were perhaps going to re-encounter them a few months later. And I told them, God removes you from a room and you willingly go barge back in. Why? Allah removed you from this room, removed you from being around these people and these energies and these circumstances, and put you somewhere else entirely. You may not like where you are currently at, but he put you there for a reason. And you willingly go walk back into the room with the same people God removed from your life, and then you wonder why life is so hard, or why you keep getting bit twice, or why you keep getting backstabbed, and oh, why me? You know, God closes a door in your face, you thank him for it. I'm not even joking. You take a minute and you just say, thank you, because I don't know what I would have done if you hadn't closed this door in my face. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't see the end result yet. And you be on your merry way with a heart filled with gratitude, because you best believe he saved you from something, like from your worst nightmares. For real. Like, I've seen this happen time and time again, that God will close doors and people just walk right back in. And I'm like, what mm-hmm. are you doing? Mm-hmm. Where are you going? Anyway, I went on a little rant.
Amen. No, I agree. I concur this message. I approve this message.
You know what I mean?
It's true.
I think today's episode, I don't know, this is what's coming to my heart right now, or what I'm thinking. It's how to handle tests, you know? Because mm-hmm. everything in this life is a test. This is what I was saying on the episode the other day, that I was saying you have to choose to see things as happening for you and not to you. And I really just think, I was, in previous episodes, I was a lot more, you can't fail a test, you can't fail a test, you can't fail a test. And I get it. I'm still there. I stand by my old self. I do. But we've evolved. We've learned. We've lived a lot of life since then. And I will add that it's okay if you fail every now and then. It's the human experience if it allows you to come back.
Of course it's okay harder. To fail. It makes it is what makes you human.
But it's how you handle that failure. I think it's not okay to fail and just fail and just sit there. Mm-hmm. But if you fail and then it brings you, it's how you get back up. Mm-hmm. That to me is, it's so okay to fail depending on how you get back up. That's how I see it now. Mm. For now. Mm. You know? Mm. Sarah, I'm going to need you to...
No, I'm just trying to think like which trajectory I want to go off. Like, it's usually I have like a tangent that we can go on. There was one question that someone asked you as well about friendship. Because I think...
Toxic friends?
I think it was toxic friends. Or somebody had...
How to handle the betrayal of being betrayed by a friend. That was the question.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The question was something along the lines of... I think it was how to process being betrayed by someone very, very close to you. You've been betrayed many a time.
Oh, yes, I have.
So we are the spokespeople on this.
We really are, unfortunately. But...
Fortunately.
We did it so you didn't have to, guys.
We ran so they could walk.
Absolute.
Walk, my babies. Frolic through the meadows.
Frolic through the fields. Honestly, the lavender fields.
I really want them to.
When it comes to toxic friends, I was having a conversation with a friend recently, and she was telling me, repeating the same narrative, different day. This person betrayed me, and every single time I was trying to talk to them, they weren't listening to me. And then I tried to ask them to do something, and they never delivered. And it was the same cycle and pattern over and over again. And I kept telling her the same thing and nothing was getting through. So I said, okay, listen, I'm going to tell you something. This person has to die. And I don't mean it in the physical sense. I mean it in the metaphysical, in the psychological sense. That person has to die. You have to sever the ties. You have to cut that cord. And you have to... emotionally prepare yourself to mourn the loss of the friend you thought you had, because that person doesn't exist. You created this fantasy in your mind and you based an entire narrative and curated an entire narrative of a person that does not exist. They are not real. This is a projection of the things that you wish you had and the way you wanted that person to mirror that back at you, but they don't embody any of the things that you told them. They're a great listener. No, they're not. They only listen when it's convenient to them. But they really helped me out that one time where they were only doing it for social climbing purposes. And then when they got what they wanted, they discarded you as if you were nothing. But they listened to me when, they listened to me when I was complaining about something. Yeah. And you listen to them 90% of the time. So when they listened to you that one time, what, you were not worthy of being listened to? Mm-hmm. So you accepted that one nugget of wisdom that they threw your way in exchange of 10,000 that you offered them because you're such a giving person. You're so agreeable. You're such a people pleaser. Is that what it is? And so killing that person in your mind, allowing them to die, prepares you for that ritual that needs to go through where you're moving on to a different phase in your life. You're moving on to a different page. That person no longer exists. And I think that when you're dealing with toxic friends, the only way you can do that is to have that ritualistic cut.
I fully agree with what you're saying. I will also add, one of the ways that I started processing a friend betraying me is something, I just had this feeling come to my heart where I would be betrayed again and again and again and again. And naturally, I had to have this come to Jesus moment where I was like, okay, it's not always everyone else. It has to be me. Why am I attracting someone who consistently puts me in a position to be like, I keep getting backstabbed. I keep getting betrayed. I can't trust anyone. There was a reason that was happening and you have to go heal that if this is a reoccurring theme in your life. So that's that. Let's assume that this is not a reoccurring theme. You really had a friend of a lifetime and she just backstabbed you out of nowhere, you know? the way I handled betrayal from a trusted friend or someone from my inner circle, I really had to sit with myself, refuse to get angry, you know, refuse to allow it to shake who I am as a human. And I just had this moment where I almost laughed, and I was praying, and I talked to God, and I said, you know what, thank you for allowing me to be a test that they failed. You know what I mean? And for allowing them to be a test that I passed, because I didn't have a visceral reaction. I took that backstabbing and I took that hurt because it hurt, you know? And I allowed it to pass in the moment for what it was. And I recognized that life isn't happening to me, it's happening for me. I took the lesson, better myself, and now I choose people way better. And it helped me in the long run so much more, because now as an adult, I even choose my business people more wisely, my friendships more wisely, and it makes me all the better for it. So the pain is necessary and the failure is necessary, but how you come out of it is what dictates the remainder of your life. So if she's going through that pain right now of, I was backstabbed, like, and God knows, babe, some of these girls can be vicious. Some of these girls, she can take like your deepest, darkest secret and go just like share it with the guy she likes to sound cooler. People, so she's become a social climber or have something fun to say at the table. You know what I mean? So you and I have been at the receiving end of that. Women can be very, 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 very vicious towards one another. So let's assume that this was the most extreme form of backstabbing. Mm-hmm. She took your husband or shared your deepest, darkest secret or whatever, or even tabbat birizitik, which means got involved in your financial streamline, like how you make your money, which is really, to me, one of the most egregious sins. You have to sit with that and just accept that she was a test you're passing, because you're not reacting to it in a low sense. Even though sometimes when they go low, we go lower. I really do believe it.
I absolutely believe that.
Sometimes when someone goes low, you go lower and show them who they're messing with.
I go 6 feet under.
Yes.
I do not care. Yeah, I will go so low because I'm petty and a Libra.
Yeah.
Watch out. Also, no, genuinely.
Like, I agree.
I am of a firm belief that if someone betrayed you and hurt your feelings, they are not entitled to your discomfort.
Yeah, and there there was a quote that I posted on my Insta. This thread of quotes that I posted got like over a million views, which was crazy to me, because it was the one where I was like, I'm not convinced. I don't know, I've done better. But it was one where it's like, those who hurt us get no say in how we get to clean up the blood.
Oh, absolutely.
Do you know how many times I've seen this? Someone will come and it's the most left field, out of pocket insult, you know, or wound. And then if I want to react in the way that I deem fit, because you're not messing with a weak person. Mm-hmm. So like we said, if you go low, I'll go lower, 6 feet under. Mm-hmm. And then they want to have a say in how I react. Mm-hmm. You get no say in how I clean up the mess that you made.
Absolutely.
I deem what is fit for what will make me do better and be better, especially when I'm following a spiritual religious growth path, you know? Mm-hmm. My God has told me what I do in these cases of injustice. Mm-hmm. So you get no say in it.
Absolutely.
Sit back and shut up. Exactly. Like, this is one of those cases where I'm like, the ego that you have to come hurt me and then you dictate how I get to react to it. Please, tell me more. Tell me more.
I just find it so funny. And so laughable when you're in a position where you have fought with someone and they betrayed you, and then you are on the receiving end of everybody's backlash. Is that everyone is trying to have their two cents in the situation and be a Greek chorus to one another, being like, maybe you overreacted. Oh, you're going to be in the same space. You're invited to the same party. You know, if you don't want to be there, you should leave. Why should I leave? Let that person leave. That's why I was saying before, people who betrayed you are not entitled to your discomfort. They're not.
That's
period.
What you're saying. Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
And the reason why they're not entitled to your discomfort is because they've caused so much discomfort in your life that even in the moment where the tie is severed, even in the moment where you are done and you're no longer facing this form of betrayal, but you have to tolerate them because you're in the same space, they're also entitled to feel comfort? Absolutely not. I want that person to feel uncomfortable.
To the point that you were making, because I kind of know like your stories and you know mine. So it just, it's bringing things up for me. But also based on what you were saying, have you ever noticed that no one has more to say about you than the person who did you dirtiest?
Absolutely.
No one has more garbage, venom, and filth to spew about you and your character and your moral compass and your ethical background than the person who has done you so dirty. Satan's in the background going, if he can't do it, no one can.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And they're with their chest.
Oh, with their full chest. And for those in the comment section who has a really big problem with the fact that we say with their chest.
With your chest means with confidence, yes. With like without hesitation, without stuttering. Like, you know, when you come in chest in first, it's like you're peacocking. Mm. Like that. Mm. That's
what I mean.
They're gonna think we're fighting. Oh, yeah. But have you noticed that?
Absolutely. And it is the funny, I can't. This happened, you and I have been in situations like this where that person will disparage your entire character in such a way, which is out of nowhere. You're like, I didn't know I was capable of this type of situation. You'll hear it from every Tom, Dick, and Harry. You're like, HVE, when did this go down? And it's crazy.
And that's why now I'm a lot more careful with when someone approaches me with a story, mm-hmm. you know? Because when I was younger, when someone would come complain to me or vent or whatever, I would almost want to come save them because, you know, we had that people-pleasing complex and all of that. Mm-hmm. Now when someone approaches me with a story, especially when they're the victim 100% of the time, I really do take a step back and I'm like, I don't like everything you're saying. Mm-hmm. I'm skeptic. Mm-hmm. I'm doubtful. Mm-hmm. Because there's just no way you are constantly the victim and constantly being done dirty. And there's never a sense of acknowledgement of maybe I overstepped here or maybe I can understand how I hurt them here. Never. It's the reality, or their reality rather, is always they did me so dirty and I'm just a victim. And that mm-hmm. those personalities terrify me.
I have no problem in cutting people off who want to
snip, snip.
Validate somebody else's victim narrative. And by that, I mean, when I've been in situations where someone has done me so dirty publicly and slandered my name and just gone about something in the most egregious and filthiest way possible, and everyone around knows what's going on, but they just can't be bothered to deal with the situation. So they will enable that behavior by pretending like it doesn't exist. I will not tolerate that. I will remove myself from the situation because I have no problem in this day and age being disliked by somebody. If you don't like me, I don't care.
Absolutely.
That's a you problem, my friend.
Absolutely.
But there was a time where I desperately cared about whether or not someone was painting me in a light that I didn't exist and misrepresenting me and all that kind of stuff. Not anymore. I could not care. I couldn't give two fiddlesticks about it.
Fiddlesticks.
Absolutely. And it's just the most ridiculous thing, because that's why when I was saying when you walk into a room and you see somebody who has done you dirty and done you wrong, the first thing you'll do is you'll have people coming up to you being like, are you okay? Do you need to leave? I know this person is there, but are you uncomfortable? I'm not uncomfortable. They are. You best believe they're uncomfortable.
I
hope and pray that their discomfort requires them and allows them to resituate their situation so they feel off-kilted. Why? Because they need to feel that discomfort. The amount of discomfort they cause me that they can get away with it scot-free. No, babe, you're not entitled to my discomfort. Mm. I will take that away and hand it back to me. Thank you very much. Mm. And you can keep that discomfort for yourself. So my presence is causing you discomfort. That's a you problem. That's a you problem, baby boo. And I'm not going to deal with that. So thanks. Bye.
Do you know what's something that genuinely helps me get over being a people pleaser and this need for people to like me that I had when I was younger? I came home one day crying to my dad and he laughed at me, and not in a condescending way, but in a, oh, Habibi, if only you knew. Mm-hmm. And he just looked at me and said, they've said worse about God. You know, they've said worse about the Prophet, alayhi salatu salam, about every prophet to ever exist in humanity, mm-hmm. about some of the greatest leaders of all time, mm-hmm. you know? And I really took a moment and I was like, they've said worse about God. Mm-hmm. Who am I in retrospect, you know? Mm-hmm. So, and then I realized I love the people who love God because mm-hmm. to me, they have the cleanest hearts. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then the people who go out of their way to insult God, and it's just like, where did that come from? You know, those are people I don't even want around me anymore.
Absolutely.
So most of these people who you're trying to please, who are saying these horrendous things about you, mm-hmm. it's like, what do you expect? Mm-hmm. This is the filth of humanity. They've said worse about God. And that really helped me snap out of it's just, I'm so irrelevant in retrospect. And I have the few people in my life who are not that. And mm-hmm. that's, if you have one or two people who genuinely love you and will stand by you through thick and thin, you are luckier than most. And the masses mean nothing to me, especially today where the masses are sheep, nothing to me.
I agree.
Do you see I what I mean?
No, I do.
But at 16, he said this to me. And it was such a... Because when you're 16 all you care about is, did people like my photo or did people invite me to this gathering? That's mm-hmm. like, that's all that's consuming your mm-hmm. mind is, are mm-hmm. you, where are you in the social ladder, you mm-hmm. know? But he said it to me, and I think it was how he laughed. He was, and it was this look, I'll never forget it, of like, if only you knew. Because mm-hmm. you're so young at 16, how much life have you genuinely lived? Mm-hmm. And now I know. Mm-hmm. And I see, and they really say, like, about God, babe. Do you see those comments online? I'm like, I got it easy.
Yeah. No, for sure. Going on that tangent, and this is for the girly pops. A lot of the questions that come, at least in my DMs, is like, how do I help? Or like, you know, how do I deal with a toxic relationship with a friend who I've loved dearly and they've betrayed me, et cetera, et cetera. One of the things that I haven't addressed a lot of the time is every single person that betrayed me, I knew they were going to betray me. I knew it. I felt it in my bones. Ask anyone who has been around me during the time where a friend has betrayed me, the first thing that I'll say about that friend, and it's in the early stages of our friendship, they'll be like, oh, do you like her? Or do you like him? What do you think? I'm like, I like them, but I just don't trust them. There's something about it that I can't quite put my finger on. And I was given the gift of being able to read people, to really trust my intuition, and to really have that guide me. And I always betray it. And the second that I betray it, they betray me. And I was like, I always knew they were going to do it. Mm. I always had this inkling she was going to do that. And we feel that in our bones. And we know this from a very young age. And as we grow up, we're told to abandon it little by little, whether it's through social constructs, through people coming in our life, being like, no, abandon what you feel. It's not real. No, those butterflies in your stomach, don't trust them. Oh, you feel this iffy way about this guy from 5 seconds of meeting him. No, ignore that. You have to doubt yourself because you're overreacting. Mm. You are thinking above your means. Like, you're being a bit too paranoid about the situation. No, you're not. That gut instinct is always right. And now it's like, if I don't like someone, you know that girl that we both know?
Yes, ma'am.
What did I say?
You did.
I said, I do not trust her. I do not think that she's a good person. And what happened?
Well, nothing. Nothing actually happened, but I get what you mean. Yes, I get that happened, but nothing actually happened.
Because
could have.
No. Her personality, did it not shine through?
Yes, it did. It did. If I had stayed, a lot more would have happened. I agree. But alhamdulillah, we're older now. Mm. And also we were given a little bit of a fair warning. I wouldn't call it fair. Warning. Mm. You know? Mm. But yeah.
It could have been really bad.
It could have been really bad. But I get what you're saying. 1,000% yes. 1,000% yes.
So that's a message of the girly pops. But you trust your instinct.
She caught that a mile away.
I caught it a mile away.
You caught it a mile away.
And I'm never wrong.
No, you're not.
Never.
Never, ever. Mm. I think it's Chanel from Real Housewives. Never, ever. Right?
I feel like this episode is always going down the path of like how to deal with toxic relationships. It's like, what is the positive?
No, but this is toxic friendships.
Yeah.
I said a little bit of the positive. You do too. But I said, for example, like it's an opportunity to do better. Mm-hmm. You know, there is a silver lining to everything, but sometimes going through the hard stuff is just hard and it's okay. But the thing is, unfortunately, we live in a day and age which, what is it? 47% of women are antidepressants. So we're talking about the negativity because understand that the negativity or the troughs, like you call it, is a very natural process in life. The failing is a natural process. Mm-hmm. It's how you get back up. Mm-hmm. And there is a getting back up. There is a yellow brick road and a rainbow at the end of the road with with a nice little bucket of gold. Mm-hmm. There is. But you have to make it through this.
Yes, you do.
You have to. Like we were talking, so we went to the beach yesterday. Was it? Yesterday.
2 days ago.
No, baby, hier.
No.
Vendredi, oui.
Non, c'est
yes. pas. Saturday. We went yesterday.
No, it was the day before yesterday.
Nope.
Today's Saturday.
Yeah, we went Friday.
No, we went Thursday.
No, we went Friday. Anyway.
People who are not watching and just listening, we are burnt to the crisp.
I don't know if I can show this, but look, it's kind of...
Oh man, it's bad.
It's
we're roasted.
We are. You should have seen us in the house. We're just like ah.
Yeah, literally cannot move. Cannot move to save our lives.
But yeah, so we went to the beach yesterday, and Sarah and I were speaking, and I was telling her because we were talking about life as we do in private, and I was telling her like, do you see this? Do you see this blissful feeling that we have? We're just in our little corner at the beach, sipping our virgin pina coladas, getting a beautiful tan, just listening to the waves. It's so peaceful. It was like, you know what I mean? Just the two of us in our little corner, and it was just truly heavenly. Like, I feel like that's the closest to paradise that you can come to in this world, because it's not just where we were, and but it was also the mental bliss that we were in, you know? And you're also surrounded by someone you love and trust, and I could close my eyes and go to sleep mirtaha, you know, just that whole bubble, you know? And I was telling you, do you see this little heavenly bubble that we're in? This is what I want my life to be most of the time. And by the grace of God, I've worked hard enough and have been blessed enough that this is my life most of the time. I live in heaven most of the time, after granted 15 years of genuine hell, but it's really what I aspired to and prayed for, and but what did I tell you? I want this to be what 90 or even 99% of my life, but that 1% of hell or a thorn in my side or struggle or strife has to remain. Otherwise I wouldn't appreciate this heavenly little bubble that God has gifted me. I would take it for granted because I would not know anything else. So the reason we go into this negativity is because if you want to reach that 99% happiness heavenly bubble, you have to understand how important and how necessary struggle is.
Amen. I agree.
Thank you kindly.
Thank you. This is ASMR.
Are we going into ASMR now?
No, I totally agree with you. I think it just, it's the old kind of tale of time, which is like, you don't really know what hot is unless you experience cold. You don't know what, you know, sadness is unless you experience happiness. It's the same idea. It's both part and parcel of the same, you know, two sides of the same coin. But I don't know. It just, the way that I think about this heavenly bubble that we try to create for ourselves, it always goes back to this idea of, am I deserving of it? Because you and I speak about this all the time, that everything that we do, we fight tooth and nail for it. We lead the charge. We are, you know, soldiers in the battlefield when it comes to doing what we need to do. And we do it on our own. And we do it without complaint. And we remove that victim narrative. And we lead the charge with this, like, domineering masculine energy, as we always talk about. We are so great fighting other people's corners. We just never fight it for ourselves. So even in those moments where we have the bliss and the bubble of protection and the happiness that we can live in, and it's like all day holiday, are we deserving of it? And for me, I'm only now at a space where I can think, yes, I am. But it's taken a long time to get there. Because when you've lived a lifetime of having experiences that negate that very thought, but whatever reason, it's social programming that you have to undo. You have to unlearn that. And it takes time. So I agree with you. I just think that it just needs a bit of time.
I mean, you know that my... Guys, this is something I will share, okay? If you can figure out what your deepest, darkest, most deepest insecurity is, please do. It's very life-changing. And you and I have discussed this, that my deepest, most deep-rooted, like stuck in there insecurity is my lack of self-worth. Because I genuinely, for the longest time, thought I was worth nothing. And naturally, that doesn't go away overnight. And it's a lot better now, a lot better. But it's still, there are traces of it left, you know?
Remnants,
and,
of course.
Yes, and in some aspects, more than traces, I would say. Maybe in my romantic life, you know? Because obviously I'm single and I don't date. And one of the things that I openly share with you is that I would like to believe that I'm worthy, you know? And I try to behave as a woman who is worthy. Hence then, for a long time, I was telling you I need to eat healthier and wake up for fajr. And by the grace of God, it's finally happening because I'm trying to feed into what a worthy woman would do. You know, I'm trying to be that. But it's still there, you know, in the deep crevices of my heart and soul, which I'm, alhamdulillah, actively working on. But this is, I know this might sound a little, people might be like, okay, that doesn't really help. But when God gave me a little and I focused, I really honed in on that little. And I was like, okay, if I say I believe in God, and that's a big claim. It's a big claim. Most people just go around saying, I believe in God. Mm-hmm. But what does it mean when you say you believe in God? It means you believe in his powers. You believe in his word. You believe in his capability. You believe in his promises to you. Even if your feelings or your hypersensitivity in the moment doesn't align with that, you put yourself aside because he comes first. That is what it means when you say you believe in God and what he has promised you and can do for you. It's a big claim to say that. So I focused on the little bit that he gave me, even though I wasn't humanly satisfied. And I was like, okay, if I say I believe in God and God makes no mistakes and he chose to bless me with this, what does it mean? It means he sees me as worthy. okay, then I'm worthy. And I had to say it out loud to myself a few times to even try to begin to even think of believing it. Do you know mm-hmm. what I mean? But it started there. Because I believe in the power of planting a seed. Mm-hmm. And it has to start with, it's where you start from, so your foundation. So I was like, okay, if my foundation is God and my spiritual journey, mm-hmm. then my reality needs to align with that. I can't keep talking a big game. Mm-hmm. It's like you say, it's not do as I do, do as I say, and not as I do. Mm-hmm. Is that right? Did I say right?
Do as I say, no, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that was a little, so you have to, bear with me here, but like if you focus on the little bit that he's given you and then just go like, okay, if I say I believe in God and God can do anything and he's chosen to give me this, there must be a reason. It means he deems me worthy of this blessing.
Yeah, no, I mean? I agree.
Does that make sense?
No, it doesn't.
It's just a little bit of a hack.
It's so interesting that you say that because my deepest insecurity, deep in the depths of my existence, the core, the inner core of my being is being misunderstood. I've addressed it in podcasts. I've addressed it in my own podcast. And it's a fear that I had to really get through to. I really had to carve deep within myself to figure out it's the feeling of being misunderstood. And the turning point, interestingly enough, was my best friends that I had misunderstanding the way that I thought about Gaza. And the reason why I'm getting emotional about it is because there was no misunderstanding. That was very clear about what I thought. And I don't need to articulate or enunciate or clarify my position in a way more so than that. And I know I'm not being misunderstood. You're the problem, not me. And that was the turning point for me. Because before that, anything that I would say or anything that I would do, I'd be like, oh, maybe they're not going to get where I'm coming from, or they're going to misread the information, or they're going to reinterpret it in a way that's not clear. Now I couldn't give a rat's. I could not care. Because that was a defining moment. That was a test that I was very clear about how I felt about something. And I was very articulate in my position because I was very vocal about my position really early on. I lost a lot of friends, a lot of followers, a lot of people, and my best friends betrayed me. Best friends, people that knew me so well and so clearly. And that is the moment that you misunderstand me? There is nothing to misunderstand, my friend. And so that's what I knew. This idea of being misunderstood is all in my mind. It's a figment of my imagination. It's something that I've curated and created, this demon in my mind that I have to face over and over again. And it's from nothing. It's a figment of my imagination. And so now I could not care less. If you said anything about me, if you threw my name into the gutter and stepped on it twice over, I wouldn't care because I know what is to be true. And the one thing I can hold myself with a clear sense of conviction is that I am very consistent in the way that I deal with things. So it is absolutely not a me problem. It's a you problem. And so you have to deal with that.
Oh, BB.
No, it's true.
I love
you. It's so true.
Okay, that's number one. Screw these people.
Oh, absolutely.
100%. 100%. Number two. I'm really sorry you had to go through that, but also not sorry because if God removed, especially like you and I both know that the situation in Palestine and Gaza has clearly defined a line in the sand of who was good and who was evil. And we're talking about spiritual good and evil. So subhanAllah, if this happened and what's happening in Palestine has shed light on a lot of things, universally, physically, emotionally, in every personal level, universal level, in all aspects. So when that happened and God removed these people from your life, that's evil. Like I'm not even just saying they're bad people or they made a mistake. No, that's actual evil that God ripped out of your life, and alhamdulillah for that.
Absolutely.
Do you get what I mean?
And how many people do you know that since everything broke out in Gaza is closer to God because of the people of Gaza, has a clear understanding in their relationship towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, have a clarity in the people that they've surround themselves with. They are more appreciative of their life. They're not attached to the worldly things. Like everything, I feel that Gaza has lifted the veil of superficiality and the veil of
facades and fakeness.
So that we can see things clearly for what they truly are. So I'm so grateful that,
for that.
All those things have been taken out of my life. I am so grateful that those people are no longer part of my, because they do not deserve to have even an ounce of our time and day, if they cannot look at dead children on social media and their heart not break for that. That to me blows my mind. It blows my mind. I can't deal with that.
I agree. If I said it once, I'll say it a million times. I really think Palestine set a defining line in the sand. And I'm talking about this is set in stone and there is no two ways about it. It is a moment in history and in time that is forever changing between good and evil. And I'm really talking a spiritual, religious good and evil. And there is no, I'm Switzerland, I'm neutral. Whatever it is, you are either on the right side or on the wrong side. You are either in divine light or truly down the most satanic path. And there is no in between for me. It is as black and white as it could be, you know? And by the grace of Allah, like you said, it's really been a defining moment in history. And a lot of people have reverted to Islam, have become closer to God, more humbled, more grateful, more in touch with humanity and genuine empathy, not the fake virtue signaling and all of that. Mind you, there is a lot of that still. But there is no two ways about it. You are either good or you are evil. And I have no in-betweens when it comes to that.
And isn't it interesting how maybe even before all of this took place, and even maybe when we were younger, the idea of like talking about things that were satanic or demonic or evil or dark, we were just like, all
conspiracy
right.
Conspiracy theorists.
Conspiracy theorists.
The Illuminati, like, what are you talking about?
Exactly. And now there is such clarity. When you see something, you're like, that is demonic. Like, I see that and I see demons within
Absolutely.
That sphere. Like, it's crazy. Or when you see, you know, like soldiers sitting there and playing with like the dead remains of
it's insane.
Satanic. It's demonic. And you cannot unsee what you have just seen. And it's just crazy to me that there are people out there that still to this day, after seeing everything that has gone on, whether it's in Sudan, whether it's in Syria, whether it's in Lebanon, whether it's in Palestine, any of these places, and go, yeah, I don't think it's that big of a deal. It's not real. This is all like AI generated.
It's horrible. This is my hot take. And I told you this the other day. I think we were having lunch. I don't remember. But this is my hot take. If you approach me with the belief that you still get your information from mainstream media, or you still talk to me about history as in the history you learned in school in your history books, you are a sheep. We have nothing to discuss.
Absolutely.
We have nothing to talk
about.
Nothing
to talk about.
If you come at me with this is where you get your information from and you still don't understand that none of it is true and you need to unlearn literally everything, you are a sheep and I cannot talk to you. That's my hottest take and I mean it. I mean it in the sense that I will not converse with you because our starting points don't even align. There is no place in which we can agree. None.
And isn't it so fascinating that the things that were all claimed to be conspiracy theories are just truths that people had a really hard time digesting? Everything. Like, it's just like, did we walk on the moon? No.
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 No, we didn't.
We didn't.
No.
Guys, daddy, no.
Daddy. What's... People really need to...
Like, I just... All the conspiracy theories. Like, every single one where people are like, that's not true. That's not a conspiracy theory. Pyramids? What did I say?
What did you say?
Pyramids? I was like, why is everyone going up? We need to dig deep.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
I was like, guys.
This is my theory about the ocean. We're trying to go up into space and distracting us, which all of it is BS, by the way, to me. And then we know less than 1% of our ocean. I'm like, guys, go find Atlantis. That's what I want to live.
Yeah.
That's what I want to do. But anyway, you have to be friends with Jeff Bezos to get...
Don't even get me started.
I saw a comment that said last year we were holding space and this year we're making space.
Stop. I cannot with this. Did we not just witness the most tone deaf, out of touch,
narcissistic, egotistical, megalomaniac?
Absolutely, that we've just witnessed in all. Like, I could not watch it with a straight face. I was... like rufflecopting.
Alhamdulillah, I just saw clips. But anyway, I don't even want to give them any airtime. This is not.
It was just too much. I was just like, too many people gave real people with real personalities.
I don't think they're real people. I think they're a hollow shell of themselves.
That's true. But like, these are people, like, as in, like, they are humanoids walking this earth.
Humanoids.
Yeah,
that's
they
the
are.
One.
Sure.
Like, I'll take that.
They're cyborgs, as far as I'm concerned. But either way, I was watching it and like my head tilted, being like, is this really where we're at in civilization? Is this what we're dealing with?
I mean, this is what humanity needs to suffer for making the wrong people famous.
Yeah, I know. And it's like, and even in the way that they were dealing with the whole, like, going on a ride.
We're going on a trip in our favorite rocket ship, swinging through the sky, little Einsteins. Climb on board, get ready to explore.
Yeah. There's
so much to find.
Yeah.
Little Einsteins.
But because of that, I was like, I don't think that I don't know if people of that ilk have the ability to relate on a basic like human level anymore, that even the language that surrounds these types of conversation, they even get mad at people. You're like, you don't relate to me. You don't understand where I'm coming from. It's like, you're at the billionaires club, my friend.
I saw another comment that said, we're just trying to pay our bills and afford rent. that's how out of touch it is. You're talking about, it's not a ride, it's a trip, it's a journey. People can't afford bread.
Yeah.
Like,
there's a genocide going on, my babes.
Literally, get out of here.
I took a daisy.
People are burying their kids.
I took a daisy because my daughter's Daisy. And then
the way
Daisy.
She stares at the camera.
And what was so funny was someone who said, like, we're not watching space. We're watching people watch space.
Yes,
and
that's I saw the thing. That.
It's like secondhand spaceage. Mm. Like, no.
Can't relate.
Can't relate, babes.
Vibes.
No, babes.
Vibes.
No. Sorry, babes. Not my monkey, not my circus, babes.
Facts.
So, yeah.
There's a lot of monkeys in a really big circus. I'll tell you that right now.
It'd be really funny if we went on live just now and saw questions.
Live?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay, let's see.
And then see, we're recording a podcast and we're like, hey, guys, what questions do you have? And we'll...
How do I go live? Wait. Okay, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Someone's asking, is Layla Palestinian? Yes, ma'am, I am. Layla, what motivates you to strive to do better and be better? God.
Let me hold this while I do this for you, and I'm going to switch the camera.
Ugh.
Comme ça. Sorry, but guys. Sarah. Layla, what motivates you to strive to be better and better?
God. I've said it many a time again, so I sound like a broken record. But this idea of meeting my God ungrateful or a failure or a coward or a liar, it terrifies me beyond what I can explain. And as I said in the last episode that I just released today, that there are graveyards filled with people who had a tomorrow, you know? Mm. So I had to shift the mentality and keep telling myself that, continuously telling myself tomorrow was quite egotistical and narcissistic, to believe that I always had more time, when as we see around us that people die every day, sometimes as children.
Okay, how did you start public speaking? And how did you realize that you wanted to be a person of influence, basically?
I didn't. I just got into a studio and I started filming with my dad. And subhanAllah, by the grace of God, this just happened. And everyone who listens I think God did this for me. I didn't choose it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So Mao.ma asks, M8 asks, how do you communicate with disrespectful people when you can't walk away from that in that moment?
That's actually a very beautiful question. So I don't deal with disrespectful people. I don't. I'll explain to you how. Even if I am in a situation where I cannot exit or I have to be stuck in this room, I will literally act like this person does not exist, because I have programmed my brain to not register disrespect as a form of communication that I respond to. So if someone is disrespectful, I will just shut down and I will not interact with you, because you either give me the respect that I deserve, that we have to give each other as Allah commanded, even if we are in disagreement. Mm. We have to maintain that minimum decorum of respect. If not, I do not register you as speaking to me.
How can I become the person I want to be? There are so many questions. So many. There's like 200 people in here.
How do I become the person I want to be? We were just talking about this. You have to decide who it is that you want to be. Mm-hmm. And you have to decide what are the actions that they would do. What does a day in their life look like? And try to emulate that as best as you can. So to me, for example, eating healthy and waking up for Fajr, to me, would make me a better version of myself. That's when I imagined the Layla that I wanted, that's what she did. So I had to force myself to start waking up for Fajr and eating healthier. And then the rest falls suit, because you start moving as that person who is the best version of yourself.
Okay, how do I reconnect with my relationship with Allah? I haven't prayed in a long time and I feel ashamed about it. I feel selfish for constantly making dua for my benefits. Oh, the live ended by itself because the connection disconnected.
Do we open data?
Okay, you had over 200 questions and you had over 200 and something people and 780 people came in and they were like, oh my God, it's Layla.
Yeah, it's the first time I've done a live.
You should do that more often. What I used to do on TikTok is I used to do my makeup and answer questions. That's what my life sessions
used Maybe to be. I'll start doing that. I turned on my data. Let's see. What was the last question you asked me? Ah, the girl who asked. I want to answer that. That's an important question. Okay, we're telling your followers that you started a live video. Siri, you did a good job with my hair. It's a little messy, but in the way that I like.
Yeah, it's cute.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you want to say salam, like alaikum salamas?
Why?
Do you want to continue this like while you're holding the phone or?
Do I talk here or here? Well, anyway, do you want to hold it again? Yeah. Okay, so you asked, sorry guys, the connection went away and now it's back. Non, tu peux tourner, ça va, si tu veux lire les questions.
Yeah, sorry guys. Okay, listen, we're asking questiones.
Okay, so the question that someone asked, how do I reconnect with Allah after a long period of time of not praying and only making dua for my benefit? The simplest answer that I can give you is just go pray. Mm-hmm. Just go make wudu and just pray. It's that I saw this rule once. I think it was in a movie or in a podcast, or it was a 5-minute rule. If it takes you less than 5 minutes, don't procrastinate it. And I swear, wallah, once I timed myself for salah, I went and made wudu and I prayed duhur, which is duhur and asr are the longest, the 4 rak'at and isha. And it takes me less than 5 minutes from start to finish. So if it takes you less than 5 minutes, get it done now. Because also, think about it this way. We're young, right? And we're in that age where we're still attracting our husbands and our wives and whatever. If you are pushing Allah away and it's less than 5 minutes, when you ask your husband to take out the trash, your wife to cook you a meal or to wake up the kids and it's a task that's less than 5 minutes and they're constantly going to dismiss you, but you've dismissed God. But don't beat yourself about it. Just go do it.
How do I move through grief? I lost my brother and my sister in a period of 24 days.
Gratitude. The Prophet alayhi salatu salam says, "Innama as-sabru 'inda as-sadmati al-ula," which means genuine patience is at the first shock. And it's shocking to lose a brother and a sister within a span of 24 days. But recognize that having them even been in your life, if you guys had a great relationship, was a blessing in itself. Some people are born and raised with the worst kind of siblings. Recognize that if you're, for example, let's say you're 16 or you're 25 or you're 30, if you had 16 or 25 or 30 years with them, you're luckier than most. As we see in Palestine and Gaza, that mothers are burying their toddlers. Gratitude. Try to recognize what a blessing it was while you had it. And, you know, it's better to have loved and lost than not to have loved at all.
Why do the oppressors who hurt people emotionally and physically seem to have a good life?
Because it's a test. A temporary good life in this dunya, when it's what, if you're lucky 70, 80 years, means nothing in the grand scheme of things. If you are living to please this dunya, then you're focusing on, oh, that perpetrator or that offender has a great life. But if you're focusing on your afterlife and pleasing Allah, then what's 70 years compared to an eternity?
How do you find your soul friends while not being in your dream city or reconnecting to your divine feminine?
You make wherever you are your peace. Because wherever you are, you can find the little things that will bring you joy and solely focus on them. Maybe try new things. Go to a painting class. Go to a gym or a workout class. But you need to make do with what you have and try to make it heavenly while you have it.
How can I let go of friends that are not bad for me, but they were just not good, without feeling guilty or feeling like I'm a rude person?
Recognize that God didn't put you on this earth to be around limited mentalities. God didn't put you on this earth to not live your life to the fullest with Him in the forefront of your mind. And the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam had the Sahaba, which are, and he kept the best people around him, and they're the people that we learn from today and study today and envy for having been around the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam. So it is not your duty to entertain mediocre minds.
How do you attract a high value Muslim woman that is not a gold digger? This is coming from a man.
You be a man who deserves that, and you pray to Allah to bless you with the best in His eyes. You pray for Allah to bless you with the ability to deserve a woman like that and to take care of a woman like that.
How do you get over and move on from a person that you're in love with?
If you're asking me that you need to move on and get over them, it means you're not in love with them. And it's just this attachment, and it's psychological deceit. God does not make you love, because we only love through God. We love through the love that God has given us. And you cannot give that to someone unworthy. So snap out of it.
If it's the right person for you, would they find you too intense?
if it's the right person for you, they could find you too intense, but love it and learn to live with it and learn to adore it. But the right person will love you for all of it. They will see even the ugliest thing in you as beautiful, and they will help you mend your broken ways.
Someone's saying, can you say free Palestine?
Free Palestine today, tomorrow, and every day, of course.
Every day of the week.
Yeah.
How do you, there's so many questions. How do you find what you're supposed to do in life, career-wise? Business, praying, of course, but what else works on your journey?
I think my dad and I spoke about this in a previous episode. Sometimes what people commend you for, what people tell you you're good at, even though you don't see it, try to go invest in that. If someone tells you, oh, mashallah, you have a beautiful voice, or you're great at painting, or wow, you're quite business savvy, go explore those venues.
How do you keep patient while you're waiting for a high-value man to pursue this person? How does it work?
You fill your life with everything good that God has given us in this dunya. Activities, good people, a good book. Spend time with your mother and father if they're still alive and you're blessed enough to have a good relationship with them. On that journey through patience, you have to be your most grateful, your most present, your most satisfied. In Islam, we call it rida, which is just gratitude for everything God has given you.
How do you heal traumas while living through it, but not being able to move out? Maybe this person is living in the situation where they have to heal the trauma, and the trauma is existing in the same house as them.
Recognizing that sometimes closure isn't an option and you have to give it to yourself. You may never get the explanation of why you've been done dirty or why this has happened to you. You may never get a satisfying answer, and that needs to be okay.
Lynn is asking, why don't you do podcasts with your dad anymore?
I do, guys, but my baba lives in Ras Al Khaimah, which is an hour and 15 minutes away. And pray for him, he hasn't been feeling his best. I've been traveling for 21 days, 22 days. And Sarah lives in the same city as me in Dubai and is gracious enough to come help me when I need her. But I love filming with my dad, alhamdulillah. He's just been feeling under the weather, and I don't like to push him more than he needs to be pushed.
How do I continue to steer away from sin? Why do I feel so guilty when I sin, even if I'm not worthy of God?
I'm going to say what you told me. No one is not worthy of God unless you're Fir'aun. But I'm going to say what Sarah told me. Feeling guilty is a good sign. It would be far beyond worse if you didn't feel guilty. The guilt is sometimes God makes you fall just to come back closer to him. So if this repetitive sin is making you want to get back closer to Allah, that's fine. And the door of Allah is always open, especially if you say astaghfirullah and you have the intention of not doing it again. So you're always worthy of God. He never closes his door, no matter what people will tell you.
How do you deal with loneliness and not having friends that you dream of after making so much prayer?
You don't, وَعَسَىٰ أَن تَكْرَهُ شَيْءٌ وَهُوَ خَيْرٌ لَكُمْ, and perhaps you hate something and it is good for you. You have no idea what God is protecting you from or saving you from. And perhaps he has something a lot better planned in store for you, but he's allowing you the serenity of being alone to grasp how important and beautiful you are and who you should have in your life.
How do I attract a high-value man if I have unresolved traumas? This is from Lynn, who asked the same question about your baba. I'm just saying because it's Lynn.
Lynn, girl, you need to... The trauma... Okay, you recognize that you have unresolved trauma. You need to go about how to heal them. Our book, By the Grace of God, has a lot to do with how we heal trauma and how we move on from strife and from grief. But two things. One thing, if it's a trauma from a person, as Sarah said in this episode, that you need to cut the cord of seeking validation or reassurance from said person. And if it's a traumatic experience, you need to recognize that it's happening for you and not to you, and you can become better, stronger, a beautiful mother because of it. You know what I mean? A beautiful partner. It's making you, it's molding you into the person you need to become.
How do I find peace with Allah and Islam, whereas I'm not a conventional Muslim? How do I thrive in my life without feeling guilty and not loved by God? And I'm not so sure what they mean by this question. I'm going to assume that they maybe are like what people like to call a modern Muslim or a contemporary
Muslim. I'm not a conventional Muslim. I don't wear the hijab. I obviously have nail polish on. I wear makeup. I don't live the most conventional life, but I try my best to remain within the boundaries of my spiritual growth and what is deemed okay and not okay for me. That being said, there are I've said this in the previous episode that I posted today, there are things that I deem more important. Waking up for Fajr, which is something, alhamdulillah, that I've now achieved and I'm doing every day, right now in my life is more important to me than my nails. That was one of the hardest things I ever had to do. And that was more important. So I'm not your everyday conventional Muslim, but no one has the right to dictate what your relationship with Allah will be.
Mm. And someone said right now, Layla, what did you study? I'm going through such a difficult time at work. Confronting people is my weakness. How do I maximize my strength while holding others accountable?
So I skipped a grade in high school. So people thought I was going to be a genius. And then I ended up being a college dropout. So I didn't study anything, actually. I dropped out of college. But alhamdulillah, now I own my businesses and I take care of my families. But if you have a problem with confrontation, you shouldn't. Because it's the... people want to fight, the people they know won't fight back. So if you never fight back, you're always going to have a target on your back, and you're always going to repetitively tell yourself that you're a target, and you're going to attract more of that. The hardest thing you're ever going to do is that 3-2-1 fight back, and then you're going to realize it's actually not that bad. But you can fight back with grace, with God at the forefront of your mind, with respect, but you can be assertive and take a stand, because God did not, excuse me, astaghfirullah, God did not put you on this earth to be someone's doormat.
Media sets certain standards in relationship that causes one to feel that their partner doesn't do enough because they are constantly comparing themselves. Like, I guess.
Yes. Ignore social media entirely. Put social media aside and then think, is it something that you're requiring of your partner that will reassure you, make you feel safe, make you feel loved, and it's something so minimal? Then you're valid in your points. Because if I'm asking my partner for something and it's something so minimal and it takes nothing from them, but it makes me feel loved, and they're refusing to do it, that's a different conversation. But if you're just comparing your life to online, please don't. Everything online is a lie.
Is manifesting allowed in Islam?
What is dua? Is dua, if not humbling yourself enough to pray to Allah to give you the life that you want, that you crave, and to visualize it and to believe that it's going to happen? Did God not promise you, دعوني أستجب لكم, call for me and I answer you? That means when you're praying for something miraculous, you believe that it's going to happen because God said that to you. So what is manifestation if not dua? It's believing that God will give you what you wanted. It's moving accordingly. That's crazy to me.
I want to be my authentic self, which is Islamically okay, but my dad's culture sees women as staying at home. How do I live my life without disrespecting my dad?
It's not disrespectful if you're within the boundaries of your religion. Khadija alayhi salam was an entrepreneur and used to work. And whoever comments, oh, she used to stay at home and work, we didn't have Wi-Fi and work from home, so I don't know what you're talking about. But as long as you remain within the boundaries of our religion and our book, and you need to go read the book for yourself, stop inheriting your religion.
Absolutely. It's
and whoever tells you the Quran is too hard to understand or read is someone who wants you to stay away from God, because God made the book for everyone.
Okay.
We finished the live.
Yes, we finished the live. It was an impromptu session.
That was really smart. I never would have thought of that. Never.
Yeah, it's super fun.
Yeah, maybe I'll do it with my dad.
You should. Crazy. It'll be super fun. Or when you're doing your makeup. That's always the best, because people ask like really interesting questions. But yeah. Anyways, guys.
That's our episode for today. Thank you so much. It was a little chaotic, but I loved it. This is actually one of my favorite episodes ever.
Yeah, same.
All right, let's go eat.
Yes,
all right. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.